following presentation, UK Federation Update, was given by Alex Stewart of the University of Edinburgh at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
Thanks for the introduction as well, Henry. My name's Alex Stewart. I'm a service manager for the UK Federation. We're one of the technology strands within JISC's AIM strategy. You've heard from Rhys a number of the kind of high level issues that we have, and I'd like to spend a bit of time kind of drilling down a wee bit into what we do. I say it's one of the JISC AIM, the technology strands within that, and that comes as part of the JISC bundle. So what we do on the UK Federation Help Desk is we provide advice free at the point of use. There's our email address on the slide there, and we provide a range of advice in that, from joining the Federation, initial deployment of your software, through to kind of troubleshooting when things are up and running. And that's SAML support there, which is the technology that's underneath the UK Federation. We also provide in-depth technical support for the Shibboleth software, which is one of the software packages that can implement SAML. It's the reference implementation, and we've built up some experience in that, and I'll show some stats later on about how much Shibboleth is within the UK Federation. In terms of where I'm based at the at ADINA. We're based at the University of Edinburgh, and ADINA is one of the or provides online services for JISC. We have a number of services that range from bibliographic and multimedia through to the geo data and mapping data there. So ADINA has, and these are federated, there's federated access to those services. So ADINA has an interest in having the UK Federation working well, and the UK Federation doesn't fit particularly well within the online services. We're somewhat off to one side, but it's good that we're sitting within University of Edinburgh and within ADINA at the moment. Okay. We heard earlier that there's 900 and odd members within the UK Federation. I want to try and unpick that a wee bit. Members can generally have one of two different roles. They can be identity providers, which is the institutions, the home organisations at which manage the identities. We have, as we heard before, it's higher education. It's pretty much full coverage of that, and there's also FE. I'd say it's a wee bit less than 80% actually of the coverage in there. But the identity providers, that's to an extent that you can see there's a, oh sorry, I should explain this graph. In the centre, there's time along the bottom, December 2006, we've got the start of the UK Federation. A couple of precursors, there were some projects before that. So it kind of starts off at about 50 entities, 50 of each kind of entities. Ramps up, there was a period moving away from the Athens system. You can see identity providers with the dashed line increases significantly there. And then it kind of, there's a saturation in that. Higher education, we've got coverage. FE, maybe two thirds, maybe a wee bit more. Schools, that's lower, but it depends actually on your on the country you're in. So for example, in Scotland, we've actually got quite a lot of schools coverage there. Education is more centralised than within England. I mean, England, there's a kind of mixed economy within that. There's different issues within the school sector in England, and I'm afraid I don't know Wales, Northern Ireland as the education sectors there. So that's the identity providers. The other kind of entity there is the online service providers, or SPs, and we've got the solid line there that you can just see is continuing to grow. And this is something that we would expect to increase as more and more online services come in, as there are non-traditional publishers, as we talked about, as Rhys talked about earlier. That can just keep increasing there. I mean, traditional publishers in that. More and more student services come in online, and we think that'll just keep going. And one of the things that the UK Federation does is we take information, the metadata about those deployed entities, take it, aggregate it, and then publish that back out to the Federation. We're the largest federation within the space. We have about 1,600 entities there. Some of the other federations are the large federations in common, which is within America. We've got Switch as well, which is in Switzerland. And it's no coincidence that those three federations, or the organisations that manage those, are the three principal members of the Shibboleth Consortium, which is directing and managing with the work on the Shibboleth project. The two bars on, well, the bars on the left and right side of that, I maybe just kind of break down a wee bit into the actual makeup of the or the software that's used within those entities. For the IDPs, we've got nearly 60% are Shibboleth IDPs there. So that's across both sectors, across HE and FE as well in that. And we have a couple of products from EduServe, the Open Athens software. We have Open Athens MD, which is a kind of hosted service on EduServe. And there's an Open Athens LA, which is that's locally deployed and managed internal to the organisation. And we've got a few that aren't those. We're seeing ADFS coming in a little bit. I think we've got two identity providers. There's a couple in the IDP. Within the service provider software, 80%. Is SHIB. We've got some from Open Athens, from EduServe, Open Athens. Atipon is a publisher. They do outsourcing of publishing websites. Easy Proxy is another bit of software there that's it doesn't necessarily have to be federated, or doesn't have to go through the UK Federation, because it's generally one identity provider talking to that service provider. But we're seen as a convenient way of distributing metadata securely, and also there's the technical advice that we can give for that. SSP is Simple SAML PHP. We've got a few of those entities in the UK Federation, but they're it's more prevalent within Europe, and there's a couple of national federations that are predominantly Simple SAML PHP. And in terms of the other 4% as well, these are things that or software that I expect we'll see more of. So within that, there's we've got Ping Federate, we've got there's a .NET. Has some kind of SAML packages that people have built their own system on. There's ADFS service providers in there. OpenAM is coming in as well. So we've got a range of software types there. And we provide kind of SAML support to those, but we can't do the kind of in-depth support to that. And kind of going from the macro to the micro, I'd like to kind of jump down to some of the protocols that we use. Back in 2001, Rhys was saying that the SAML was getting standardized through the OASIS technical committee. SAML 1, I'll just kind of run through the protocol on the left-hand side, because this will show one of the difficulties that we have within the service desk. Time goes down on that. So on the left-hand side, the user accesses a protected resource. Service provider says, you're not authenticated at this point. We're looking at a kind of simple case at the moment where the service provider knows where your identity provider is. So there's HTTP redirect there. There's authentication with your home organization. That the home organization's identity provider then sends back a request, yes, you're authenticated this time, goes back to the service provider. And at that point, within SAML 1, the earlier version of the protocol, the service provider then makes a machine-to-machine transaction with the identity provider and says, well, tell us more about this principle. We've got, and one gets back a number of the attributes from that. Attributes are generally things like, or we define some core attributes in the UK Federation, and scoped affiliation is one of them. So it tells you whether you're a staff or student at a particular organisation, maybe a principal name that can be linked up across a number of different services, an opaque permanent identifier, edge person targeted ID. So we've got a number of those core attributes, and that comes from a separate attribute query, and that goes between the SP and the IDP itself. After that, we've then got the SP decides whether to authorize access to the web page, to the online resource. And SAML 2 came in 2005. It rectified a number of things in terms of the actual content of those messages. But one of the things within that was the simplifying the attribute passing, because that's now able, one can miss out the back channel conversation between the SP and the IDP, which had the attributes that maybe include personally identifiable information, and these can now be encrypted and just passed as part of the HTTP redirect. So that's one of the big advantages of SAML 2 over SAML 1, and that reduces the need for SPs and IDPs to actually directly talk. Which means it makes it easier for us as a support organisation, because, I mean, from us, we're a small kind of central organisation there. When people say, so this is broken, what's happening, we don't have any access to either of the endpoints, so we then have to provide advice. You know, what's your network path between the SP and the IDP? Generally goes on port 8443, and if your identity providers and your network teams aren't talking, there'll be firewalls that come down there. Or, you know, you move your the IDP software moves, changes host or something. There's a number of issues that can come up with that, which don't come up so much with SAML 2. SAML 2 authentication. The other thing that talks about, Rhys talked before about getting stats. One of the things that you can note from this is there's nothing within there that's talking that's saying anything that comes through the Central Federation, our service. It's the conversation is between the user, the service provider, the identity provider. So all that information about the those conversations doesn't come near the central body. So we don't have a central way of looking at how many authentications or who authenticates to whom. And you know, it's that by design, it's keeping the central thing small and out of the way there. So I can see there's a tension between the architecture of the Federation and wanting to find about statistics of who's authenticating to which service and how often. I think I'm happy with that. Sorry, what time am I up to? 10, okay. Right. Recent activities. So that was the protocols before. And SAML kind of splits into two parts. There's the protocols, which is the messages that go across, and then there's the metadata itself, which defines the kind of trusted parts. Let's go back to this one. And here you can see that SPs and IDPs are communicating in there, and there's only certain URLs that are allowed to participate in this, and this is part of the SAML metadata, which the UK Federation technical team curates, as it were. So as part of that, we need to make sure we've got a secure trust fabric. And that's how that's the basis of the kind of SAML conversations there. So we've got program of work, and these generally take, you know, of the order of months, because we're dealing with deployed software. It's out on customer sites. We've got 1,600 deployed entities. A lot of it is keeping in touch with those deployers. We've moved to signing our metadata with SHA-256 digital profile, digital signature profile. And that was, once again, it took about 8 months to get that through. It would have taken, I think, longer, but we've put various things in place within the UK Federation. So we provide a metadata file, we provide a production metadata file for general use. We've also got two other metadata files within that. We have a test one where we can try out new things. So we put the SHA-256 signature out on that earlier. And we've also got a fallback metadata. So there are some organizations which need a little bit of extra time to make the changes required. So over 8 months, we moved out to SHA-256. Within production, we were there by the end of 2013, which is, you know, a couple of months before the NIST recommendations not to use SHA-1. Sorry, that was what we were using before, SHA-1. The fallback aggregates, we changed the end of February, so there were only a few customers that we had to provide that extra support for. Second thing we've been doing is we're looking at the trust between the different entities, and so one of the things within SAML metadata, there are certificates in that. The certificate is really a convenient vehicle for transporting keys around for the asymmetric crypto. And what we had been doing was looking at allowing public key validation of certificate chains. So you will want to have a key name in the metadata. When a digital signature was receiving a message, that would then be checked through the certificate chain. Now we're phasing that out for two reasons. I mean, the first reason is that you do need to inform people on the trust routes of a PKIX infrastructure. And you know, with browsers and stuff like that, there's, you know, the OS has a big file. One of the things with SAML metadata is it has the trust routes at the top of that metadata file. It doesn't rely on anything on your operating system. So the point is, one of the reasons for reducing the number of trust routes is that makes it easier to manage. And so over the last year, we've been removing trust routes, and even prior to that, actually. So we're now down to the only certificates we allow to use PKIX are the ones procured through the Janet Certificate Service. The argument for actually having no trust routes in there at all is one for interfederation. So when, you know, UK Federation is dealing with home organisations within the UK, and we have a certain set of trust routes, but when we want to talk to federations outside, they perhaps don't have the same trust routes. And two ways to deal with that: you can either take the union of those trust routes, but that kind of leads to difficulties with maintaining trust across those, or you can take the intersection, and the intersection just goes to zero. So better just say no PKIX within that. So first of all, we embedded the keys, we made sure the keys were long enough, currently long enough, and then we're removing key names. Much of what we do, as I said, is talking to customers, and so removing the key names, we've kind of taken, we've looked at kind of classes of different software and different people. So we first of all looked at the service providers, then we looked at the Open Athens LA IDPs, and we took the key names out of those, Open Athens MD, and we're now down to about 40 Shibboleth IDPs with key names. All of those keys expire in all of the certificates that contain the keys expire in 2014. So we think that'll just come out in the wash as people update their Trust Fabric certificates. We could push it a little bit faster if we want to, but I think we're in a good place for that. Third thing, algorithm agility is something that's going to come in with Shibboleth IDP v3, which is looking at the encryption, the digital signature, and the hashing algorithms that one can use within the messages itself. So we're trying to put in some work for that. Shibboleth IDP v3 is scheduled for release at the end of this year. So we're just trying to put some of the kind of groundwork in for that. Skip on there. Support levels. We provide technical support. We update registrations, and part of this is, you know, removing key names, certificate updating. New entities, that's pretty flat. That's new entities per month, which is why the, if you remember back to the second slide, number of SPs just increasing. So we've got that. There's a continual support load for that. Quickly, I'll rattle through a test IDP. One of the services we provide for customers is, well, we've got a test service provider. So home organizations can test their IDP, make sure things are configured correctly. SPs are also becoming an increasingly important customer. So we're deploying a test identity provider. So that's now deployed, or that's registered. One of the things that we're gonna do for that is, we're going to put the credentials out on the web. You know, here you've got, it's a bit like TestShib. We've taken the kind of lead from that and the lead from German Federation, where they have an identity provider that has some of the credentials on the web, and you can use that to then access your SP. One of the, and the accounts in there, we will, you know, have kind of typical accounts. Maybe here's a student member, here's a staff member, maybe here's an alumnus or something like that. One of the things we haven't worked out at the moment is, because we're going to put the credentials on the web, we need to kind of monitor if someone's using that for access to any services. I mean, we do say within our technical recommendations for participants that you shouldn't allow access just based on authentication. To that, you should have further checks within that, but. You know, we do know that some service providers don't do that. So we're going to have to be quite careful about that. And that's one of the things that I want to try and talk about, ask people about at the security Birds of a Feather. So I don't know if there's anyone who's going to be there and knows about kind of monitoring IDPs. I'd be really interested to hear from you and your experiences there. And I think quickly the last one is EduGain. I've got time for that. So this is the UK Federation. Rules of membership states really home organisations within the UK, service providers from anywhere can join, but that means that if there's an entity within a service within the UK that's wanting to be accessed from externally, that doesn't really work so well at the moment, and that's that's not how collaboration works. That's not how research works. These are international endeavours. And so one of the pushes is for an interfederation between the UK Federation, between other national federations. To give you a kind of scale of what's going on, UK Federation joined EduGain, signed a declaration in May last year, and we went into technical production in December. So it's still, you know, relatively early days for us. And UK Federation has 1,600 entities. EduGain is another metadata aggregate at the moment. People are having to, or entity deployers are having to opt into that. So there's 300 entities within there. And of those 300 entities, we're importing things from other EduGain members. We've got about, that's 250 entities we're bringing in from EduGain. Most of our IDPs, and if you think back to the kind of breakdown of the UK Federation stats, we've got more SPs. So the people that are importing are IDPs looking for online services. So I think this is why we're seeing more IDPs coming in through EduGain. It's something I think that's to be encouraged. One of the things the UK Federation does is we've got high metadata standards. We've got quite robust and checking of the metadata. And one of the things that we apply to anything we import, we apply our metadata checks. So there's about 10% of the entities that we could import fail for a variety of reasons. So we just drop those on the floor, and then we contact the entity operators and say, your metadata is can't be imported into the UK. We're for these reasons, and that's part of maintaining the quality within the UK Federation, but also it's sharing the that experience. Still got a long way to go. There's maybe 6,000 entities within federations worldwide. Of the ones in EduGain, I've just listed the top six there, or the ones that have more than 10. So we've got Brazil, which seems to have a policy of opting. It's an opt-out policy. So they're basically putting all their entities within EduGain. We've heard the French aren't in that list of the popular ones, but they're considering making it an opt-out. At the moment, it's still opt-in. So we'll see what happens with that as we go. And that would be the end of my talk. Thank you very much for listening there. I've put the email address of our service desk. We're very happy to hear from you. Thank you very much.
Question.
Yep.
Obviously, a lot of the services Alex just described, to carry on at that level, we really do need to demonstrate to our funders the use of the Federation, as Bruce was saying. So, if you haven't deployed Raptor, I would really urge you to have a look at it. In some cases, with an institution, the use case for Raptor might well come from the library, but there is a second use case, and it's actually our use case to help us support that.
Any other questions about
Quick question for science. You showed the graph with the increase in service provider entities. Do you know, who are registering those entities? Is it commercial publishers, or is it more from services that have been sort of shared by the UK?
Yeah, there's a mix there. The traditional publishers will do that, and also kind of journals move from publisher to publisher, so often there's the new publishers coming in from that. Student services, we're seeing quite a lot of those, and this is a way to authenticate that the student, if your home organisation's identity provider says this person's authenticated and they're a student at Leeds, so you can then offer the student discount. So one of our the new members there is Adidas, the well-known provider of educational footwear, and things like that. So I expect there'll be more of those. If you look within Ireland, for example, Ireland has a lot of extra services in there. There's kind of parking meters. There's student discounts for a lot of things. So they've moved on that quite fast, and I can imagine that that's going to happen here as well. It needs some policy on that.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks.
Okay, just show our appreciation for that. Thank you. This
recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.